Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with the three House District 36 Republican candidates. They're in the studio with me now. Welcome to Sherry Klein, Patty Mackey, and Agnes Moran.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And this is a live call-in show. KSTK in Wrangell is also airing the forum live, and listeners from all the communities within the new House District 36 are welcome to participate. So if you have questions for the candidates, please call 225-9655 for local calls or 1-800-557-5723 if you're calling from Prince of Wales Island or Wrangell. But first, let's hear an opening statement from each of the candidates, starting with Sherry Klein. What would you like the voters to know about you?
At the age of 14, I started working in the visitor industry, heavy construction, Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce, oil spill response, finance, and health insurance throughout my working career. In the last 2 years, I've worked for Representative Peggy Wilson. I have owned and operated my own small business for about 15 years, where I work in Ketchikan, Prince of Wales, and Wrangell. And then my husband and I, Lauren Enright, have also owned and operated a business in Wrangell for the past 18 years, Stikine Ready Mix and Critter Enterprises. I understand the challenges, the long hours and hard work, as well as regulatory frustration that small business owners face. And I believe that our economy and the future economic development of Alaska and the communities that we serve depends on small businesses succeeding in order to provide the jobs that we need and our children need. Most recently, working the last 2 years in Juneau for Representative Wilson, I learned how the legislative process really happens inside and out. I helped to move legislation forward. I watched, understand the internal workings that include the necessary collaboration and negotiations that are necessary to do this job. Knowing when to compromise or push back is essential. I have learned an invaluable amount on the processes and collaboration needed to be effective in Juneau. It is very important to get along with others, and I have made critical connections with legislators and staffers. Through my broad work experience, ease in getting along with others, experience in Juneau, I believe I will be the best person representing us.
And Patty?
Thanks, and thanks to KSTK for joining us tonight. It's great to know that the folks in Wrangell will get to hear from us a second time. I'm Patty Mackey, longtime resident of Ketchikan. I was born here and have lived here the better part of the last 32, 33 years. I have been married to my husband, Charles, for pretty much all that time. We've raised two kids together, and both of them are living and working here in the state. I'm running because I believe that I have the skills and the sensibilities and the experience that voters in this district are looking for in a legislator to represent them. Throughout my professional life, I've had the opportunity to interact with elected officials at all levels of government, whether local, state, or federal, and also have had a lot of opportunity to interact with municipal leaders throughout Southeast as well as Alaska. I believe that my work experience coupled with the amount of time that I've donated in volunteer service to the community and to causes that I believe are important have given me the opportunity to demonstrate to people my skills in leadership, communication, and problem solving. And I think those are all things that we would be well served by with a legislator. I also have a great deal of respect for the office. It is an office that, you are a public servant, but more importantly, there is a very important business that is conducted in the Capitol that benefits us as residents and the state as a whole when we look towards our future. And I have a very deep respect for that, and I would be honored to serve in that position. So thank you.
Thank you. And Agnes Moran.
Well, good evening, and thank you all for participating this evening. I'm Agnes Moran. And when you're running a campaign, you do a lot of door-to-door. And recently I was going door-to-door here in Ketchikan, and a gentleman answered the door, and I started to introduce myself. And he says, "I know who you are. I read about you in the newspaper all the time." And I looked at him and I said, "Well, that might not always be the good news." And he says, "What do you mean?" He goes, "We need to have people willing to fight for us." And I think that is the crux of the matter here. When the population of Alaska is 736,399, and 75% of those people live in the rail belt, and 75% of the concentration of power in the legislature lies up in that area, you need to have a strong voice in the House to represent you. You need to have someone who's willing to fight for you. During my 4.5 years on the Borough Assembly, I learned firsthand what it is to work cooperatively with other, essentially legislators, when you work with the Borough Assembly members. Since the Borough Assembly has term limits, every year it was a new assembly, so every year you had to rebuild those relationships and connect with new assembly members. I know what it is like to be approachable, to be on essentially 24/7. My phone rings, I answer it. I get an email, I respond. I'm standing on the sidelines, at the ballpark, at the ball field. Somebody approaches me, I take the time, I listen to their concerns. These are all the types of things that we need to have in a legislature up in Juneau. We need to have that type of representation that knows firsthand what it is to work with other fellow legislators when you may or may not always agree with them, but on the next issue, you may be looking at it differently. I have the ability to do that. I've demonstrated that ability in my 4.5 years on the Borough Assembly. I've demonstrated the ability to stand firm against special interests when I didn't believe they were taking us down a path that was right for this community. I've demonstrated my ability to be responsible to my constituents, and I believe that's prepared me to take it to the next level and represent us at the state. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And again, the numbers to call if you have questions for our candidates are 225-9655 for Ketchikan and Saxman, or 1-800-557-5723 if you're calling from POW or Wrangell. In addition to our own local primary race, Alaskans throughout the state will be voting on a ballot proposition calling for the repeal of SB 21, the governor's oil tax plan. How will you vote on that issue and why? And this time we will start with Patty.
Without a doubt, I plan to vote no on that proposition. I do not support it, and my reasons are pretty cut and dried. Alaska's in the business of selling oil, and as a state, we depend on those royalties that we receive from oil sales to basically fund everything that that we provide in terms of spending for through the legislature. You know, some of the funding we get, of course, is committed to certain programs and things, but when it comes to the dollars that are available for the projects and the needs that every community every year comes to Juneau and talks about, 90% of that is oil money. As someone that's providing a product to a customer, Alaska needs to remember that if the customer isn't happy with the price, they're going to go elsewhere to make that purchase, and they are not going to be as likely to invest their time and energy, their money in jobs and all of the equipment needs and things that that industry brings with it in Alaska. And for that reason, I believe strongly that we need to listen to our customers and not pit them as, you know, global people that are trying to run our state, but rather consider the fact that if you're in a business and you sell a product, you kind of need your customers to support you. And if they don't like the price, they'll go elsewhere.
Thank you. And Sherry?
I also will be voting no on ballot measure one. I worked on this bill with Representative Wilson in the Resources Committee, and we spent over 250 hours of discussion, revisions, debate. I think they did a pretty good end product. And as with just about any bill, it's not going to be perfect, and especially not with it a tax. So, you know, it can certainly be adjusted in the future, but I don't think we should simply just kill this bill as it is. I believe that it makes great strides in encouraging new production, which is what we really need. It doesn't do us any good to tax ourselves out of just out of the world. We need new development and new production, and the bill takes care of both of those problems. you know, we have to be competitive with not only the world market as far as taxes, but also the U.S. market. And we were completely out of the ballpark with our prior tax system. And not only do we have to be competitive with the tax system, but we have a tremendous amount of disadvantages that are not seen in North Carolina and in Texas and California, the other states that we're basically competing with. So we need to compete in that direction also. So thank you.
Thank you. And Agnes? I'm also voting no on Proposition 1. But when I vote no, what I think I'm voting for there is I'm voting for the 18% increase in construction spending that's come across since Senate Bill 21 has passed. I'm voting for the pledges that we've seen of $5 billion in new projects. And I'm voting for the pledges we've seen from some of the oil companies to increase capital investments 25% in some instances. And their commitment to reinvest 90% of those profits back into Alaska. When I'm voting no on Prop 1, I'm actually voting for the environment that's increasing investment in Alaska, that's increasing jobs for Alaskan. And it's bringing more revenue and more, hopefully, with these new investments and these new projects coming online, an increased volume of oil in our pipeline.
Great. And what about the other initiatives that will be on the November ballot? Marijuana, minimum wage, and PEBL. What are your thoughts on those issues? And this time we will start with Agnes.
Okay. Well, Proposition 2, marijuana, I do not support. And I've said this before, and I think it was very well put by Wanda Sykes when she was asked this question by Jay Leno on The Tonight Show when California was looking at this initiative. And he asked her if she supported it. She said, "Are you crazy? When you look around this country and the states that we're in, have you ever seen a stoner with a to-do list?" And that's exactly what we do. We don't need to be robbing our young people of their initiative. We don't need to be adding more problems, dependency problems, to what we already have. We have the most lenient marijuana laws already on the books. I think we're fine. The next one is...
minimum wage.
Minimum wage. The thing I think people forget about minimum wage, that minimum wage is a starting point. It's not a destination. Minimum wage is designed for entry-level positions. It's designed for positions where you're learning your job. You're learning to come to work. You're learning to show up on time. You're learning the skills necessary to move you on to greater responsibilities and move you on to a higher pay bracket. And that being said, I think the other thing that I don't like about this proposition that it includes automatic wage increases. It's essentially remote control government, which I don't believe in. Because when you have automatic increases built in, there's no regard at all for what's going on in the economy at the time. Economy could tank, the increase still goes forward. And so I think we need to have our legislators legislate. We need to have them consider when it's appropriate and when it's not to raise the minimum wage. And on the PEBL, I fully appreciate the sensitivity of that area. But like on the Borough Assembly, when you keep having conditional use permits for zoning regulations, this is kind of the same thing. If we have an issue with mines or development in watersheds, we need to come up with a reasonable solution across the state. We can't continue to special legislate individual areas. It becomes very difficult to moderate. It becomes very difficult as you move forward to remember the history of what took place for this one area. If we have an issue of development in watersheds, we need to address it at a state level instead of spot fixing it.
Thank you. And Patty Mackey.
I don't support initiatives in general. I make it a practice not to sign the petitions, and I typically vote against them for the very reason that they circumvent the legislative process that we have in place in our state. Oftentimes, they are propelled by special interests, and they don't get the vetting and the public hearings and the other process that law that goes through the process in Juneau receives. in terms of the issues, you know, I also think that initiatives are oftentimes poorly written. And the other thing is that when they do pass, then the legislature ends up spending the better part of its time over the next year or two sorting out how do you manage it, how do you set up the, you know, the what kind of staffing do we need, and how do we make sure that the regulations are enforced. And anyway, I just think it's not a good process for making law. And so for that reason, I will vote against all of them. The marijuana initiative in particular just does not have the safeguards that I feel it needs to have to allow adults to, you know, do what they want to do in the privacy of their home, but there's no protection for children. So I'm not in favor of that. Minimum wage, I truly believe that businesses will pay what the market demands. A company that is savvy and wants to maintain good employees is going to provide competitive wages and benefits. A company that decides that, you know, lower wages and high turnover are okay for their business plan should have the right to make that decision. And I believe that people can choose where they work. And as for the Pebble initiative, again, there's a process in place. And the area of Alaska where the Pebble Mine development has been situated is actually zoned, if you will. Not, I don't know if that's the correct word for state land, but it is a mining area. So the folks that are developing this have not done anything wrong. They've taken land that was allocated towards mining, and they're going through the process. There is an environmental impact process that takes place. It takes years and years and years before the mining actually would even begin. And there are plenty of stops along the way for regulatory agencies to put a stop to it. So I think that the process is good and that the initiative just gets in the middle of it.
Thank you. And Sherry Klein.
I am voting against the marijuana initiative, number two. And I don't believe it is in the best interests of Alaskans. I think that it's very much lacking in quality and regulatory controls. It will end up just being a free-for-all across our state. Especially noticeable is there's no regulation on the strength of the THC drug. And as we're starting to see in Colorado, it's starting to cause some major problems, especially in things that we would normally think our children would be eating, cookies, lollipops, cupcakes, the types of things that, you know, that's what they have. And they don't understand that just because it's on one shelf or, I don't know, it's in a different area of the house that it's not for them. So I don't support this initiative at all. And as far as the minimum wage, I also am not supporting it. I don't think that it's going to get passed on to the consumer in the products. And I think if what we're trying to do is protect the minimum wage earner, then we're simply passing this cost on to them when they're purchasing products. And I also suspect that it would end up bumping some of them into the next tax bracket and do double A. So now they're now paying more taxes and paying more for what they have to purchase. So I am not in support of it, especially with the automatic creases, as Agnes mentioned. That's the part that I have a particular heartbreak with. And then on Pebble, as Patty mentioned, we have the process already there, and we need to follow the process. We haven't even filed any of their permitting paperwork, and so we have a federal and a state process, and we, I believe, need to follow those processes before we shut things down.
We in Ketchikan have been waiting quite a long time for the state to improve Ketchikan's connection between Revilla and Gravina Islands. How would you make that happen? And this time we will start with Patty.
I was so sure I wasn't going to be the first one to answer that question. I thought I just went first. Man, that's a complicated question because I know that there, you know, the preferred alternative has been and continues to be the bridge. We want a bridge. We want a hard link to Gravina. But we have been told over and over again that it's not feasible, and it's that there are many other alternatives that we need to look at. So making that bridge a reality is something that it's going to take a lot more than one legislator from Ketchikan to accomplish. As far as other improvements, I will say that regarding airport access specifically, it is frustrating that so much of the burden of operating our airport is put on local government and also on the ratepayers who have to purchase their tickets to go back and forth, and not only just folks that are traveling, but the workers that are over there. We do have, you know, Gravina is part of the borough. It's land that we could be developing in a number of ways. And it's extremely frustrating that we are basically kind of stuck with no real efficient means to do that. And so I guess I don't know that I have an answer for that. So we'll see what the other candidates say. Thanks.
Thank you. And Agnes Moran.
Well, I've been, the entire time I've been on the assembly, this has been an issue. We have been waiting 7 years, 7 years for environmental impact statement out of the state on Gravina Access. We've been promised it time and time and again. And the key to getting that environmental impact statement out is we can't do anything until we have it. If you take a look at what this, and it's not in the state's benefit, truthfully, to give it to us, because during the those 7 years that we've been waiting for this environmental impact statement, our $360 million, give or take, that we received for the bridge has been taken away and allocated to more politically strong areas of the state, and we're down to $96 million. And in conjunction with that $96 million, we also are facing not only the state entailing more of it away, but there's also the danger that the federal government can sweep unallocated earmarks. So there is a potential coming up here that if that money isn't allocated, it could go back to the federal government and we're stuck with nothing. We have tried numerous times to get that environmental impact statement. And until the governor, I think, believe, decides that it's going to be released, it probably will stay in transportation. Now, the assembly has set forth numerous different resolutions on access to Gravina. And there's been a lot of discussion back and forth with the public on it. And I think, personally, the way forward is for the assembly or for the community to get the terminal on this side. And so you don't have to deal with going across to the airport as we do now. Everything would be checked in. Everything would be done on this side. And then you would shuttle. It's comparable to what some of the bigger airports do when you check in at a central location and then go out to one of your satellites. I think that would make the most sense for this community. And they will be stuck with the ferries for a while. They need to be fully funded if that's the way we commit forward. But I think we can mitigate the impact to the community by building a terminal on this side, doing most of your functions here, and then essentially treating the airport as a satellite.
Thank you very much. And Sherry Klein.
Well, we certainly don't have the support up north any longer, as Patty mentioned. And we don't even seem to have the support in our community any longer. I thought that both the city and the borough voted against a bridge option in the last year. And so we're not even seeing the support here, so that isn't helping us any longer. But as has been mentioned, until the EIS is released on the, it's not going to go forward at all or have any choices, but the money has been slowly been squirreling away. So I don't have too many hopes that it's going to happen in my lifetime. I at one point really thought that it was, but I don't think we have too many hopes at this point, and I think we're just going to have to look at improved ferry service, which, just like our Alaska Marine Highway, is not really a lot of options there either.
And speaking of the Alaska Marine Highway, how would you work to improve travel between Southeast communities? And I'm not sure where I am on the list for who speaks first. I think it's Agnes this time. So go ahead, Agnes Moran. Yeah.
We need to get the communities engaged again in the process of the scheduling. We have an advisory committee that, quite frankly, hasn't really been listened to. We've had numerous resolutions dealing with this coming not out only out of Southeast Conference. We've dealt with it at the AML level. And basically, it's fallen on deaf ears. And we need to change that attitude in Juneau. We need to make them realize that it's our highway system down here. We need to work with them to make them appreciate. And what it may take is putting together a type of coastal coalition of legislators who have ferry system in their districts to kind of band together to make it a priority, to make it such that we do have a participatory type of environment for people to listen to get their input in and have it addressed. Now, that being said, it's a whole new environment. And we can't operate the way things were because of oil prices, because of personnel costs. And we need to look at efficiencies there also. But primarily, I think we need to have a voice from the people who are directly affected in the process for determining how the ferry system evolves going forward.
Thank you. And Sherry Klein?
I think as we're seeing with the lack of seniority that we have here in Southeast, now that we've also lost Representative Osterman, who is a huge proponent of the ferry system, it is going to continue to be a harder and harder struggle going forward because although I don't remember the percentage, but a huge percentage of the passengers are feeding into the Anchorage and Fairbanks area. They don't seem to realize that in those districts. And so it is always a struggle for Southeast to make sure those legislators realize this is our highway. And that just isn't something that comes across well. The MTAP board has been doing a pretty decent job of trying to look out for the communities. It just doesn't seem to be reaching upward in DOT. And I think that's where we are going to have to push back on.
Thank you. And Patty?
Well, the Marine Highway System is significant not only as a transportation system, but it's really a part of our way of life in Southeast Alaska and certainly has been a career option, a very good career option for a number of people in Alaska, particularly in Ketchikan. And, my own family has been employed by the system. But the bottom line is that the cost to operate that system per person in coastal Alaska compared to the cost of building highways is huge. And it's going to continue to be an expensive proposition, but a very, very necessary service. So we're going to have to kind of, come to an understanding that there needs to be a willingness to support new ways of providing that service. The Southeast Transportation Plan, the 20-year plan, the latest version of it was just put out a few weeks ago. I was involved in a teleconference where we were looking at some of the recommendations that relate to the ferry system directly. And I saw a number of ideas that have been on the books for, 15, 20 years, the whole idea of putting in shuttle ferries and connecting roads and trying to decrease the amount of transit time on board the vessels and using smaller vessels where it's feasible. And those are all ideas that we certainly should be willing to look at, but more importantly, we should be really focused on getting the communities engaged on what they can support and helping determine what are the best solutions for the communities that are going to be impacted.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It's Russell in Ketchikan. Are you there, Russell?
I am. And first I want to thank all three women for taking the time and energy to run. I know it's a significant commitment on their parts, and I appreciate it. My question is, I'm a local business owner and have an existing Tidelands lease. And I recently contacted the borough to ask them about expanding my current Tidelands lease to include additional Tidelands. And I was told by the borough planning department that that action would take somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 years to complete. And my question is, how did we allow at the government level something so simple as a pretty simple real estate transaction to take 3 to 4 years? And if you were elected, what would you do to cut through a lot of that red tape that business owners and individuals deal with as they interact with the state government? And I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Thank you, Russell. Let's start with Sherry Klein.
You know, that's actually something I'm fairly familiar with. We just finally received our Tideland ownership for our property in Wrangell, and we've been working on it, I believe, 12 years. So there is certainly a bit of a holdup in the DNR department. I do believe that these last 2 years, they have been trying to get that a little bit more under control. They realize it's a huge problem, and I know that's something where they're working through those leases much quicker. When we were dealing with it personally, it was usually the oil and gas that takes precedence, but there is a process now that is a much faster process than it has been in the past. And I think when we find out these problems, we need to make sure that you are contacting the legislator, because they can oftentimes make a pretty big difference in situations like this. So it seemed to me that DNR finally became aware that they had a problem, and I do believe that they are trying to address it.
Thank you. And Agnes Moran?
As a community, well, we just went through Tidelands issues at the borough level. And I think one way we can do this, and we've kind of, we struggled with it, and we didn't do it right the first time, but I think eventually we got it pretty close. And I think that's one way to look at it. I think that DNR probably should hand off more of these Tidelands to the local entities to let them deal with it. I think because we know the impact. And if it isn't involved in, say, you know, oil and gas or something large like that, if it is something that's right within the borough's confines or within the city's confines, I think it's more appropriate for the folks that are on the ground at the municipal level who really appreciate the impact to the community to be making those decisions. So I think I would like to see, as appropriate, to have DNR hand off more of those Tideland leases to the local entities like they have done in the past, and have the control be local on those.
Thank you. And Patty?
Well, in general, there is a lot of red tape when you're dealing with government, and everybody knows the frustration of how you get things done on government time versus how you get things done when you are a business owner. In general, I also believe that those snafus and piles of paper also amount to a lot of costs in state government that we could be better served without having to pay. In general terms, I would say that I've actually made a priority that I would like to really dig into the different agencies and look at their rules and regulations and try and eliminate as much as possible state oversight. So when Agnes mentions local control, I think it's an excellent idea. And I think that it's not just DNR. I think there are issues in other departments, too. And when business owners are trying to just take the steps that we require them to take by law in order to conduct business, then we darn well better make sure that we make that process efficient and user-friendly, and that we are there to serve their needs as quickly as possible.
Thank you very much. And we have another caller on the line. It's Joseph in Ketchikan. Are you there, Joseph?
I am.
Go ahead with your question.
Well, first off, I want to echo Russell and just thank you, everyone, for running. I know it's a lot of work. I saw several of you in Wrangell when I was there recently, and pounding the doors in the rain and walking around town. And I know you guys are putting in a lot of work, so thank you for that. What I wanted to ask is, you know, it wasn't long ago I was in Peggy Wilson's district when it was Petersburg and Wrangell, and I was in Petersburg when I was listening to public radio, and I found out that you know, the oil tax, oil was very low, the revenue was low, the price of oil was low, and the state was taking less in. And she said, hey, time for a state income tax. Also, other senators and House members from Anchorage and the Rail Belt, where they don't have a sales tax in Anchorage, were saying, hey, time to do a state sales tax. And that would impact the smaller communities that have a sales tax as well. And, you know, I was looking at the math and saying, hey, there's not enough tax base in Alaska to pay for state government anyway. And it seems to me that we judge the success of our House members and Senate members and make them the marshals of parades and everything else for how much capital bacon they bring back to these communities. So I was wondering if you think that we should continue to judge your success on how much government economy you bring back to the district, or if you think it's time to make the transition to cutting those projects at particularly the state level, and that comes back and not creating more capital projects that create more ongoing expense, and start funding more operational issues and make that the focus, and in order to preserve state revenue, put money back in the constitutional budget reserve, and stop this negative fiscal path that we're currently on.
Okay, thank you, Joseph. And we're going to start with Sherry Klein again.
I don't think that it should be judged on the money coming back to the communities, and I think that's a huge problem of why we run into what we have going on right now with projects that don't make any sense happening in a lot of the Rail Belt communities. Because we need to be looking out for the good of the entire state, not just our little district, and trying to pork barrel as much money as we can into our district. And I think that I hope to see that actually will change here in the next few years when we have to. You know, it's going to have to be tightened up, and I think maybe we can make that change finally. I would like us to see to be cutting those operational costs, not increasing that budget either. So I think we're going to have a very slim capital budget for a few years, and I think we may need to make huge strides in cutting the operational and making it a sustainable budget.
Thank you. Patty Mackey?
I too think that there's something wrong with that whole process of the mindset and of bringing most money home would keep you in office, and I don't know that all voters really look at legislators' track record based solely on financial gains. But I will say that I do believe that there needs to be, you need to be willing to take a stand on what you are willing or not to fund, and that there should be prioritization involved. Ketchikan's had a pretty good example of that over the years with the community leaders coming together most years and supporting, together collectively a list of things that they felt the community had the greatest need for. I also believe that anytime you're looking at a project, whether it's Ketchikan or elsewhere in the state, that there should be some demonstrated need. And I also believe quite strongly that there should be a significant amount of consideration made for the contribution that's made at the local level before a project is just completely funded with state dollars. As mentioned, some places have implemented property tax over sales tax. Some places don't really charge taxes. And while residents seem to enjoy the fact that they're not taxed locally, they do create a bit of a burden on the rest of the state if their community is coming to the state and asking for solely state dollars, and they're not willing to put, invest in it as well. The other thing I would say, too, is that we need to be willing to wait our turn. Ketchikan, Southeast Alaska, we're already challenged by the fact that we have a smaller population base. I think Agnes mentioned the rest of the state is 25% compared to the bigger population centers. And lots of communities in Alaska have needs. Lots of organizations have needs. And so for that reason alone, I believe that to judge your legislator and bringing home the bacon, so to speak, is really a mindset that we need to change, and that it might be difficult, but I'd be willing to take a stab at trying to come home and tell people, hey, we saved the whole state a lot of money, even if you didn't get everything that you wanted. Thanks.
And Agnes Moran.
Yeah. I've already gone on the record as stating that I think we need to change our mindset there, and we need to start judging our legislators also on their ability to cut the budget and to look at unnecessary regulation. And I've already been in this situation. When I got on the Borough Assembly in 2010, we were looking at the loss of Securiel schools and the federal program payment in lieu of taxes, which was $2 million. And during that time frame, the Borough pretty much had an annual budgeting philosophy instead of a long-term sustainable philosophy. And in 2010, myself and Jim Shoemaker and other members of the Assembly started down a path that emphasized sustainable funding and took a multi-year look at funding impacts instead of an annual approach. In short, we started looking at anything that we spent this year, if it didn't play out over multiple years such that at the end of the time frame, we didn't draw reserves down low enough to impact our bond rating, we didn't do it. I mean, we had to maintain our bond rating. And we used that as our budgeting philosophy, and we really did change the mindset. And it was very difficult. There was a lot of pushback. There was a lot of anger. But because we did that, we as a community are in a much better place today. We avoided most of the trauma that other districts and other areas of the state had this year, especially around education funding. If you look at what happened to Ketchikan this year, we fully funded our schools, and we put $1.1 million aside for a reserve account. Juneau started their cycle $12 million in the red. Anchorage was looking at 200 layoffs in their district. Sitka was drawing down reserves. We were in a good space because 4 years ago, in 2010, we started down looking at a sustainable path. We held that coalition across multiple borough assemblies, and we're in a better place today before. And we dropped property taxes 16%, and we didn't do it on the back of the school district. Their reserves during that time went from $1.2 million to $1.6 million. So it's an attitude that you can take to the state that we have to get off this merry-go-round of looking at the annual impact and take a sustainable look to funding. We've done it on the local level. I think it will apply to the state level, but it will be hard, and there will be a lot of pushback. But if you maintain, you can make a difference.
Thank you very much. And if anybody listening wants to call in with a question, you can call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. What are your ideas for expanding hydroelectric opportunities in Southeast Alaska? And we will start with Patty Mackey.
Well, I think it's not necessarily my idea, but more what the various communities and what organization like SEPA has put together in terms of their priorities for what makes sense for utility operation. We know that we recently have the Thomas Bay Authority has now kind of merged into SEPA, and so I think we have a stronger coalition in Southern Southeast in particular of communities looking at their energy needs. Obviously, funding for hydro is going to be important to make those improvements. It's a costly form of energy, but it is, for the immediate future, the best source of energy we have until there's the opportunity to look at other alternatives. So, what would I do? I would be supportive of what the communities tell me they need and try and help them get the funding for those projects.
Thank you. And Sherry Klein.
Hydro definitely needs to continue to be a priority in Southern Southeast. And I think part of that is we need to make sure that the other parts of the state understand it as well, because it is a huge cost in comparison to some of the other options out there. And so they need to realize what a difference it does make that cost is basically a one-time. And as was mentioned, I mean, we just need to be very supportive of those ones that are coming forward, and there's quite a number of them in the gate. So that would be our, as a representative, would be our, what we need to be doing.
Thank you. And Agnes Moran?
Hydro's been very successful in Southeast Alaska, and SEPA is in the process of looking at a survey of looking at what where to go next with Hydro. And on the local level, we've been very supportive of Hydro. The borough stepped up and helped fund Whitman Lake. And then we've also put the raising of Swan Lake at the top of our priority list last year. But I think we have tunnel vision sometimes when we're looking at electric or energy projects in Southeast. I think we need to start expanding our vision. I think we can look at the Bradfield Canal connection. We already have the right-of-way there. We can look at thermal. We've got Bell Island Hot Springs there. The electric lines go straight over that. There's been proposals out there from some private entities, perhaps, to put a municipal waste power plant in areas such as like Lee's Cove. And I think there's a lot of different options out there. Hydro is expensive. Hydro takes a long time to develop, but I think we need to take the blinders off and start looking at some of the other alternative energy forms out there and see if there is a place for them in our energy portfolio.
Did I go through all three of you? I got distracted by the phone calls on that question. All right, thank you. And we do have a phone call. Barry of Ketchikan is on the line. Can you hear us, Barry?
I can.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank all three of the candidates for running. I think you're all very qualified to do the job. Here's my question. Our senator, Senator Stedman, has been a pretty strong supporter of the repeal of SB 21. So I guess my question is, number one, do you think he needs a new calculator or how it looks for our community if we have, representatives, basically going on one side and our senator on the other? I'm just kind of interested in your thoughts on that.
Thank you, Barry. And this time we will start with Agnes.
Proposition 1 will be resolved before any of us reach the legislature.
Sure.
And during my time on the borough assembly, there's been numerous times around the dais that we've had disagreements between different assembly members on different issues. But at the end of the day, you work together and you do what's best for the community and you do what's best, in this case, for the state. I don't think there's probably anybody in the legislature who spent as much time learning and researching and is knowledgeable about oil and tax issues as Senator Stedman. And so we need to respect his position, and we need to engage him going forward to resolve the issues with whichever tax system is in place. ACES has some significant shortfalls. If we return to an ACES environment, his experience will be invaluable to help resolve those issues. If we move to if we maintain the current environment of Senate Bill 21, he has some valid arguments there that need to be addressed to amend it, perhaps in the long term after we see how this all plays out, to get us to a situation where we have a stable tax environment that maximizes the benefit to Alaskans and minimizes the impact to our partners in the oil industry.
Thank you. And Patty Mackey.
I think it's more a matter of a different philosophy or a different approach to this issue. And again, I would reiterate what Agnes previously said, that we know that Senator Stedman has spent a great deal of time looking into this issue. But I would much rather take existing law that we have and that has really occupied the majority of the legislature's time for the past 4 or 5 years in developing and fixing, the things that maybe do need to be amended, as opposed to throwing it all out and starting, going back to a program that we absolutely know did not work well. The SB 21 was not even enacted until January of this year, so we really have only had it in place for 7 months. And I think this initiative probably, people were signing the petition well before it even was enacted. So, I think it's just a different approach, and I just feel that it would be a console amount of time during session that I would like to spend working on a lot of the other programs and problems and issues that we face.
Thank you. And Sherry Klein.
Well, I don't think there is any issue in working with Senator Stedman. As everyone has mentioned, he's extremely knowledgeable on this subject. And I don't think that you would want to see every legislator and their senator be in lockstep on every single issue. That's kind of the point of having different views and having different representation. So, you know, as it's been said, once what happens with the ballot measure will go forward from there. But I don't suspect there is any problem working with Senator Stedman on, or he won't have any problem working with any of us. And I don't think that it does look badly on the district at all.
Thank you very much. And we do have another caller on the line. This is Mark from Ketchikan. Mark, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
My question was back to how do your candidates feel about the development of the mines on the south end of Prince Wales Island?
Okay, thank you very much for your question, Mark. And
thank
we
you.
Will start with Patty Mackey.
I am very supportive of new industry or revitalizing old industry, since mining is, in fact, one of the oldest industries in this region, where it's supported by communities, where it makes sense, and where it doesn't impact other industries that we currently have in place. So I think, you know, we touched on the regulatory and permitting process earlier in the program. And, you know, we're certainly not there yet with either of those projects, but it is exciting to see the energy in the community here in Ketchikan as well as on Prince of Wales among folks that live here about the opportunities that these mines could present. So at this point, I'm supportive of the process. I'm supportive of the companies continuing to do their due diligence, and certainly will be listening and paying attention to what the communities determine is the best course for them with the proposed development of these mines. Thank you.
Agnes?
I'm supportive of the mines on Prince of Wales. When you look in our schools today, 1 in 4 of those desks are empty, which tells us that we do not have the young families in this community that we had as compared to 1997. We need to create an economy where we have family-sustaining jobs. And I think mining is part of the solution to creating that economy. The mines will go through a very long and intense environmental permitting stage. And during that stage, all of these issues will be fleshed out, but I think we still need to be supportive. I think we all need to be actively looking at what's taking place there in writing if we do support it. On the Borough Assembly, we've been looking hard at bringing those mining jobs, the complementary part, to Ketchikan by having an ore crushing facility on Gravina. Again, that would provide family sustaining jobs in our borough there. I personally lobbied for Senate Bill 99, which provided bonding capacity as approved by the ADA process. So I have done that. I think the mines are one part of a patchwork of industries that we need to bring to Southeast to make ourselves more self-sustaining and more in control of our own futures.
And Sherry Klein.
And I'm very supportive at this point of the mines as well. And I think, again, we need to let them go through the process. They have not filed any of their permitting, any of their environmental. And I just hate to see any private business, any enterprises shut down before we actually see the process happening, see what they plan. In particular, the UCOR mine, everything that they have shown is going to be all self-contained underground, and where they do mine out, they will be filling right back in with a concrete mixture. So it's not like that particular mine would even have any type of runoff issues at all. But those will all be addressed, again, in the environmental impact statements and such. So I think it's a huge opportunity for all of us in Southeast, and certainly don't want to see it shut down before it is even looked into.
We're coming to a close to the hour, so I have just one more question before closing statements. You all seem to have fairly similar philosophies as far as issues go. So what sets you apart from each other? What makes you unique, and what makes you the person that you believe should be in the legislature this coming session? And this time we will start with Agnes.
I think the thing that makes me unique is that I've not only been elected, I've been reelected. I've had the community vote on me twice and show their confidence in me. And I have a track record. It's really easy to say you support timber, or you support mining, or you support resource development. But what have you actually done on that? And I have a track record of doing that. I have written comments on the Tongass Land Use Management Plan. I've actively been engaged with bringing mining and those types of jobs to Ketchikan. And I've done the work on the local level that a legislator would do on the state level, and I think I've been a very effective borough assembly member. Otherwise, I probably would not have been the top vote getter locally when I've run for re-election. It's a combination of things. It's knowing the local issues when you've lived them. It's knowing the impact that state decisions have made on the local level. And the one thing that really does set me apart from my two co-candidates here is that education is going to be a big issue going forward. And I am the most versed by hands down on the impact that manipulating the education funding formula will have locally. I'm the best versed on the dangers there and on where we need to go forward with education funding, and it's still going to be a big impact going forward. But basically, I think my experience actually on the local level, working cooperatively with my fellow assembly members, being responsive to the citizens in this community, and standing firm when we needed to stand firm against special interests, I've actually done it, and I think that's really what sets me apart from the two other candidates.
Thank you. And Sherry Klein.
Well, I think the working relationship and the actual businesses that we have on the ground in a good portion of this district is something that makes me quite a bit different. And then also my legislative experience actually being in the inside of the legislature up there is quite a bit different than going up to the legislature as a lobbyist or as someone bringing concerns or a constituent. And the legislative process and the going forward in the legislature is all about relationships, and that's a huge part of what can make you effective. And I think I've built up quite a few of those relationships, and that's really the difference between us. We're all pretty well philosophically about the same.
And Patty Mackey.
My experience has been representing one of Alaska's largest industries for the better part of the last 10 years in Juneau. As someone who's been speaking on behalf of an industry to make sure legislators understand our needs for assistance and support in tourism in particular, there's hundreds of millions of dollars generated in taxes and fees, and a very small percentage of that is asked to be returned each year to Market Alaska as a destination, which of course will in turn generate more money for the state. Not as much as oil, but still, tourism does pay its way. And because I've served at a state level representing that industry, I've had my feet on the ground in Juneau multiple times with multiple groups of legislators, and it's been a bed of roses sometimes, and it's also been a very, very challenging job when you're sitting in a legislator's office and they are telling you what they think should happen as opposed to listening. That was actually one of the reasons that I thought that maybe I could do that job a little bit better than that person who didn't even give me the time and hear me out for my concerns. I've also been pretty active in the Ketchikan Legislative Liaison, a group that goes up annually and talks to legislators and administration officials to basically advocate for the priorities that the community leaders have, in fact, indicated are the important things that they'd like to see the legislature tackle, and particularly the budget items that they want to see get funded. So throughout those opportunities, I've gotten I've had the chance to make acquaintance with legislators from throughout the state, many of their staffers. I've worked with many administration officials. And it is those experiences representing industry that are skills that I can put to use across the board for the needs of District 36.
Great. And we are running slightly over time, but I want to give you each a chance for a brief closing statement. And we'll start with Sherry Klein.
Well, I believe I bring a unique and diverse work and background that gives me a variety of experiences in understanding and relating to all parts of our district and our community. And I think effectiveness in Juneau, like I mentioned previously, is all about the relationships. And my time in the legislature working for Representative Wilson and the connections and the relationships that I've been able to make are essential to our community in order to go forward. I appreciate and I understand the process and how it really works in Juneau on the internal workings of the legislature, and I understand the necessary collaboration and negotiations that it's going to take in order for us to go forward. And for those reasons, I believe I will be the most effective person representing us, and thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. And Agnes Moran?
District 36 needs strong leadership, and we can't afford to wait 10 or 12 years for someone to age into leadership. I firmly believe that if you work hard, if you bring a strong work ethic, if you bring a strong understanding of the issues, which I'm well grounded in having worked on them on the local level, that you should be able to get into leadership within 4 to 6 years. And I don't believe that if we can wait 10 or 12 years to get there. And I have that commitment too, that I will work hard, I will hit the ground running, and if I'm not in leadership in 4 to 6 years, then I'm probably not in the right position. Because it truly isn't about longevity in office. It's about how effective you are. And I've demonstrated meeting after meeting, month after month, for the last 4.5 years on the Borough Assembly, that I do have the tenacity. I do have the ability to dig deep into these issues. I have the ability to listen to my constituents, to address their issues, to work well with my fellow Assembly members. And I think my background, I'm an engineer, and when you hire an engineer, you hire a problem solver, and I'm an excellent problem solver. And I think that whole package is what you need to take to Juneau, and I have that whole package.
Thank you. And Patty Mackey.
Thanks. I've mentioned previously that this election is all about strategy, and voters in our district must be strategic about who they elect and then eventually send to Juneau. The reality of success in Juneau is a relationship with the majority and the leadership. If you don't have that, if you are not sure whether or not you'll be welcomed in, you're not going to be an effective leader. My previously mentioned experience, I know that I will be very much welcomed into the majority. And it's a good time to be a freshman in the legislature because there is going to be a certain amount of turnover. We have legislators who are retiring. We have legislators who are moving from the House into the Senate. And that's going to free up key committee positions for people who are coming into the legislature this year that maybe legislators 2 years ago wouldn't have had when they were freshmen. So, again, I think we need to take the opportunity and really use the circumstances of this coming election year to our benefit. Finally, I think I'm one reason I think that I would be a great legislator is because I plan to make this my full-time job. Ketchikan in particular and some of our other communities have not enjoyed having a legislator on the ground, nor have our legislators done much, I think, to travel to communities outside of where they live. And I commit to being very visible and involved in the work. I would leave my current position in order to do it. And my strength is my relationships that I've already fostered and the new ones that I am very capable of creating to the benefit of our district. Thank you.
Thank you. And that wraps up this evening's call-in show on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to Emily Files, who helped out on the phones, to the listeners who called in, and thanks to our candidates, Sherry Klein, Patty Mackey, and Agnes Moran. Remember to vote in the primary election on August 19th.
Thank you.